As I constantly say, it's important to take time to nourish yourself. So I'm going to be taking a few weeks off here, probably about a month, to work on the retreat, which is coming up on September 7th, and I'm so excited for, and also to study for my IFMCP exam and continue recording great content for this podcast. But I needed a little time to breathe, so I'm taking a few weeks off. I'm going to replay some of my favorite episodes, and please stick with me. If you like the Nourish and Shine podcast, please leave me a ratings and review on iTunes so that more people can find it. And get excited. Season 3 is going to be amazing. I have so many great people coming on. We're talking infertility, Ayurveda, and aromatherapy, just to name the first 3 episodes. So please hang in there. I'll be back with you and enjoy this transition from summer into fall. Take some time to nourish yourself. Welcome to Nourish and Shine, where I talk with passionate leaders in the fields of nutrition, functional and integrative medicine, and wellness, providing inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and live a whole vibrant life starting now. Welcome to Nourish and Shine, Julianne Soterio. I'm so grateful to have you here talking with me today.
I am so grateful to be here, Amy. Thank you for inviting me to be on your podcast.
Yeah, well, I think you have so much to share, and I just can't wait to get started on this topic. So first of all, though, I'd love to learn a little bit about you. So do you mind telling us about yourself?
Yes, I grew up in Rochester, Minnesota, and I have lived in many places, received my master's in nutrition from Bridgeport University in Connecticut. And then from there, I have studied many aspects of holistic health. It's really my passion, and whole foods cooking, homeopathy, aromatherapy, you name it. I just absolutely love to learn about health, and I went on to get other degrees, and right now I'm practicing both in Minnesota and in Oregon. And then, of course, I do lots of Skype and phone type sessions too, and primarily in Minnesota and in Oregon are my practices.
Awesome. How did you get interested in nutrition?
I was living out in San Diego. I went to Gustavus and always dreamed of living in California. So at the time, I actually met someone at a co-op who was the head of the American Herbalist Guild, Roy Upton. And he was so knowledgeable about health and herbs and nutrition. And we just randomly met, and it just sparked this interest in me. And I said, this is what I want to do. This is so such my passion. And then, so starting in my 20s, I just started to take lots of classes on herbology and all the different subjects of health. And then that's what led to deciding to focus more on nutrition. And so it all started there.
That's amazing. And what about nutrition really made you want to focus in on it?
I felt like it's such a context of going back to traditional cultures and learning, are there things that were a thread from way back that we need to pay attention to and make sure that we don't lose that thread? So I was very interested in how do traditional cultures, how did they eat, how do they eat, and there's now such a revival of that, and it's so exciting because I feel like that dream of wanting to make sure we didn't lose the thread has definitely been realized, and that ties into the microbiome, which,
yeah.
So that was kind of the initial impetus, like, wow, what is it about health that in the past has really given people this vibrant level of health, and how are we going to incorporate that into our such a different life we have today, and can the two merge together, and can we do it, you know, in a way that's enjoyable? And so I definitely feel like children are my passion to help to have healthy babies and teaching mothers preconception care and all that stuff. So yeah, just wanting to feel like, what is it we can do to really make an impact and help people to connect to that which they may not even be aware of is part of their cultural history or their or past ways of eating and living. And so yeah, the original book that motivated me the most is a book called Nourishing Traditions by Sally Fallon.
I love that book. Oh my gosh.
I love that book. It was my very first cookbook. I mean, I had other little books, but in terms of like a Bible that I really learned to prepare healthy food and the principles of traditional nourishing, traditional cultures. So it was dog-eared copy. And since she's come out with many more editions, and now, of course, she has this huge following with her whole foundation, which is based on the teachings of Weston Price, which is a book that definitely goes into some very scientific analysis of different cultures from a dentist who wanted to find out, is there something that we need to learn that we may not know of? That, and he went around and studied, traveled all around the world and recorded all of his findings of traditional cultures. So she was way ahead of her time with her book, Nourishing Traditions. This was 23 years ago or so, that she gave recipes for all these wonderful cultured foods that nourish the microbiome and principles of how to prepare food that maximize nutrition and minimize any anti-nutrients and maximize the digestibility at the same time making the food delicious. And so I just started in the beginning and I started making every recipe in the book. So then I was making all the cultured foods and it just opened up this whole world. And I felt like, wow, you know, cooking can be really nourishing and really delicious. That it doesn't have to be this idea of boring rabbit food or something like there's dividing up what's good for us with, oh, the temptations over here, which is food that maybe isn't optimal for health. And it's like never the two shall meet. And rather, wow, you know, you can make this amazing, yummy food that feels so nourishing and energizing. And so that just got me so jazzed about nutrition. She really did set me on a course of really wanting to learn as much as I could.
I love that. And it is an amazing book and cookbook. And so when you talk about maximizing nutrition while minimizing anti-nutrients, can we go there for a second? Because I think that's a super interesting topic.
Yes. Gosh, I've done entire lectures on just that subject. And so there's certain principles that Sally Fallon really, she's a very research-oriented, so that she has tons of references in her. It's a cookbook, but it's also more of a nutrition book. You could just read it as a nutrition Bible, really, where she's very thoroughly referencing everything. So it's, I see it as, you know, not really her opinion as much as just extremely well referenced. So yeah, she talks about some of the more modern day industrial kind of food preparation, that the direction things went in, where we wanted things quick and there was much more of a purchasing things already made, prepackaged and, you know, all that type of thing, instead of making stuff from scratch. So with that, she said, well, we actually lost a lot of the wisdom of why traditional foods were prepared the way they are, and then why that provides a much more digestible food. You know, for example, like soaking your nuts and seeds overnight and then drying them will eliminate that. When I say anti-nutrients, something like certain properties that are found in those foods raw that will bind to minerals and make them unavailable. And then if you soak them, which is what traditional cultures always did, the soaking, the low drying, and the sprouting, that will liberate much more nutrients as well as prevent anything from certain things like phytic acid and mineral inhibitors, enzyme inhibitors. So there's a whole world to that. And I found that very interesting. I felt like, well, we don't want to lose, again, losing the thread. Just we don't want to forget that as if like we don't need that anymore, because actually people could really benefit from that kind of knowledge and having the opportunity to experiment. And so luckily now there's so much available that you can actually purchase. Whereas at the time the book first came out, you really needed to do a lot of it yourself, which some people might be really excited about that and have the time and the desire. And others say, you know, they just, lives are very busy. They'd like to have for themselves and their families, but they don't want to sit there in the kitchen and spend hours making things. So I'm just so excited to see this huge plethora of availability of different types of things, such as cultured foods, homemade stock that you can buy already prepared, and sprouted things. And so, yeah, it's wonderful that there's a lot available that wasn't even like 5 years ago.
Yeah, I have noticed that as well. And I love that. Just recently, I am kind of a do-it-myselfer at home, but recently I got into seed sprouting and I can't get over how easy it is. Like, I always just pictured that I would have a moldy jar of seeds like in no time. I have not had any problems with it yet, knock on wood, but it's super easy. And yeah, I just didn't even realize how many packages of sprouts I had bought for all these years. And then I was like, oh, doing it myself is actually not that bad.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the probably easiest and very, very beneficial, amazing nutrients. That was one of the first things I did actually in high school before I just had read about it somewhere. And so, yeah, I guess it does go back to starting in high school for me, where I felt like, oh, what can I do that's so simple? And in the middle of winter in Minnesota, have these fresh, live food that's really like a salad garden going in the, you know, in the kitchen sink. And that did get me excited about what are things we can do that are so easy and yet so beneficial. And you don't need to have a greenhouse and a big garden. And so to this day, I still grow a lot of sprouts. Because you're right, it's just once you kind of play with it and realize this doesn't take much time at all. And it's so many different varieties of things you can sprout. And then reading the nutrients, so much nutrients that you'd have to eat pounds of regular vegetables to get what you can get in a serving sprout. So yeah, I love that too.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the microbiome. I know that's kind of our main focus today. So for yes. people who aren't super familiar with what we're even talking about when we say microbiome, can you give us kind of the intro to what is the microbiome and why is it important?
Yeah. So in a real nutshell, the microbiome is a community of microbiology life that lives in your body. And so we have the microbiome can encompass the gut, the skin, all your organs, your liver, and your blood, and pretty much is part of is the bacterial life that is your in your entire body. And then, of course, what's really focused on these days is more of the gut microbiome. And that's really what I am focusing on in terms of information that's relevant and helps people make changes in their health would be really honing in on that. And there's so much research that's coming out recently about the gut microbiome that just even the last year, it's just exploding. So the science is definitely backing up what the traditional cultures and information have been doing for eons. So that's really, really exciting because a lot of people do like to see the science as well. And I really like to have both. And so, yeah, that's kind of the nutshell. And the microbiome is established in the first 6 months of our life. And it communicates with our immune system and our nervous system. There's a whole connection now that's come out in this research with the gut-brain connection, which we now know from wonderful research from many different people that 70% of our immune system is found in our gut. And so knowing that, there's exciting things that we can do as far as we can control our health through much of our nourishing our microbiome and has far-reaching effects on many, many organs and glands and brain health and emotional health and immune system, and the list just goes on and on. So yeah, it's really wonderful to know that we have that ability to shape our own health through addressing such things.
Absolutely. And I know you're passionate about cultured foods and kind of those foods that naturally contain the probiotics. What are some of your favorites?
Yeah, so one of my favorites that now is available, very widely available through a company called GT's, which people might be familiar with their kombucha brand, because that's, I've seen it even in all the convenience gas stations. I've seen it there. It's definitely available in the co-ops and the health food stores, their kombucha. So GT has come out recently with something called Cocoa Kefir, which is, they have both the liquid, the coconut, fermented coconut water, and then they make a coconut yogurt from the young coconut flesh. And what I love about theirs is the taste is amazing, as well as the price is very, very affordable. In the past, there's been a few companies that have made it, and it really wasn't widely available. It was very, very expensive. So I find that one is just so easy to incorporate and especially helpful for children. There's a lot of people that do not want to do dairy, or they cannot digest dairy for many reasons, aren't interested in doing regular dairy yogurts. And the Coconut Kefir was actually originally invented by a woman named Donna Gates, who is, her whole movement is the body ecology diet. And I had studied her work years ago and actually started making my own coconut yogurt and coconut water kefir from her culture packets, gosh, 20 years ago. And at that time, you had to make it yourself. You didn't have it available to purchase. So to this day, I still really love her packets. And I have a recipe on my website, on my blog, for her coconut water kefir with her packets. And then at her website, you can also read about making the actual yogurt. I didn't put that recipe on yet. And so for kids, what I find, it can really, really make a big difference in small amounts. And so you think of like drinking coconut water, people would just chug down a whole bottle of it. And with the Cocoa Kefir water, you're doing like an ounce or two at a time. So you can even mix it with other things. You can throw it into smoothies. You can put it, mix it with a little bit of juice, and it actually tastes delicious. And so it's not a sour type of food like some fermented foods are. And the kids seem to really love it. And I found personally that it's probably the best thing in terms of one cultured food that can have a tremendous impact on the gut health. And Donna Gates had talked years ago about how she found it really helped with sugar craving, decreasing sugar cravings if you incorporate both the cocoa water and the Cocoa Kefir yogurt. And then with kids, it's protective when they do eat sugar. It's actually helpful to mitigate the effects of sugar in their diet and helps to balance out. And then by giving them such a good influx of the yummy microorganisms, microflora, enhancing that, it's helping to prevent the bad bugs from proliferating and increasing the good ones. So ideally, we want about an 80-20 balance of the good flora versus what we call the bad. We do have some naturally occurring flora in our gut that would be considered not healthy. And yet the body, as long as the balance is there and we have 80 good and 20 so-called bad, we're very, very healthy and we're just keeping that balance in check. And so yeah, it's available at the co-ops, at Store Natural Grocers, which is a chain. We have one in Rochester. So it's widely available, and there's just so many cultured foods that I could talk about. That's probably my favorite.
Oh yeah. And it was funny the other day we were talking and you mentioned that the cocoa yo, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's my favorite. And I started eating it when I was pregnant with my son because it was lower in sugar.
Yeah.
like way lower than regular yogurt, but it tastes so good. And so it was like my special treat. And I can't get over how good it is compared to the other coconut yogurts. And their coconut yogurt too.
Yes, it's delicious. And sometimes I doctor it up a bit and I experiment with the kids. And I always tell kids, and it applies to adults too, I never ask them to eat something that they don't like, because it just doesn't work. I always want people to feel joy and just a sense of yummy. Everything that they eat is really good. And so when you add more cultured foods in, taste buds can shift where maybe something you didn't like before tastes yummy. At the same time, I love whatever recipe they came up with that cocoa yo is just a real hit with the kids and with adults who may have, like you said, maybe they tried other fermented foods and they just weren't real jazzed about it. This one seems to be, so many people really enjoy it. And you can also play with it. Like you can throw a little bit into a smoothie. If someone wants more of a sweeter, they can throw different fruits in there, even coconut milk added in. You can play with coconut milk. You can make it a little thinner texture if it feels too thick. So there's lots of things you can play with to get to the level that whatever sweetness you like.
Oh, yeah. So what are some simple things people could do to help promote a healthy microbiome other than the cocoa yo or coconut?
The cocoa yo. Yeah, that would be definitely the top of the list. And I would say that one of the easiest things to do for adults and kids is to, including this cocoa yo, is to eat some type of cultured food every day. Can make a huge, huge difference in the health of the microbiome. And it doesn't have to be a large amount. So like some people who love kimchi and sauerkrauts, which again, we are so blessed that they are available widely now. The real sauerkrauts, which I call the ones that are not made with vinegar, that are in the refrigerated case, that say live raw sauerkraut, even a tiny amount of that, you know, like as a condiment portion is wonderful for making a huge difference. So, you know, some people like to switch it up, and there's just a lot of different cultured foods available now where you have, of course, kombucha. That for people that like that, that's another one you can throw in the mix. And ideally, the more variety, the better. And yet if you find one that you really love, and that's just one that you just feel is convenient to do daily, one type will do a huge amount of good. So I would say just having a small amount a day and doing it more consistently than say a larger amount sporadically is one of the wonderful things you can do for digestion, for energy, for all the benefits that you get from the nutrients that are found, the enzymes, it's going to help you digest all the other foods you eat and have an effect on hormone health and regularity and just so many far-reaching effects. So that would be my top number one thing. And another one would be filtering your water. I would say water that you drink as well as shower water if you are not on a well or something where you're drinking from a well that's been tested, and that's wonderful that you probably don't need to filter so much. As with the city water with chlorine, there's a lot of other things people like to filter out of their water. And I really focus more on a basic level that's inexpensive would be something that filters out the chlorine because of its effect on the microbiome. So you think of a disinfection, you don't want to be adding that chlorine into your gut because it's going to also kill off some of the good flora, as well as when you're showering on your skin, you want to be nurturing all that lovely microbiome on your skin as well. And so that would lead to being careful of the products that you use on your skin, that they're things that are free of any toxins, that you want to make sure you nourish the skin microbiome, and that's going to also have an effect on the rest of your body. Another thing would be to eat a diverse range of fruits and veggies. There's lots of studies now that the fiber and the wonderful polyphenols and the antioxidants in produce has this modulating effect on the microbiome. So there's all these studies coming out showing this wonderful effect. So the more diverse, the better. You know, some people say if you can do 30 different ones every week, which seems like a lot of different ones, and yet summertime, it's a lot easier to do that with the farmers market. So the more diverse the range, the more the types of antioxidants and different nutrients that will feed the microbiome. And then, of course, locally when available, you're tapping into the microbiome of your area that you live. Because you could extend the microbiome beyond your own body into your environment, the soil around you, the air around you, the water around you. So it really, you could take it all the way to the level of the whole planet. That the more diverse, the better is definitely the way to go with the combination of the fibers and the nutrients.
Awesome. I totally agree with that. And also it just makes it more fun. Like you said, eating everything should be fun and enjoyable. And I think especially the summer when you can go to the farmer's market, that's like so fun.
Yes. And I know you're an avid gardener, Amy, which is, if people have the passion for that, that is a whole nother level of feeding your microbiome with plants that you grow yourself organically, nurturing your soil. That's like the off the chart level of wonderful help for microbiome. So those that are interested in gardening, that's amazing. That would be definitely on the top list too.
That's such a good point. And I think you don't even need to like get as crazy as I am. Even just like planting simple things can make such a difference. Like that healthy bacteria in the soil, like carrots and beets and everything, like maybe not. My big thing is I hate peeling stuff. So I don't peel my carrots or my beets. Like I just wash them off and enjoy them.
That's the best of the best. And my grandparents had this amazing organic, they didn't call it organic at the time. They never used any chemicals. And as a kid, I remember that just running out and grabbing things. And from the research now, you know, they're showing that if we could all have access to that kind of fresh live food that's teeming with this wonderful good bacteria is so healthy for us, you know. So to be able to take advantage of that and with your kids too, it's just, that's wonderful.
It's so much fun. And I think there's a big movement too, like even with the schools doing more school gardens. I know like our hospital has a hospital garden, but gardening seems to, at least in my world, be catching on again, which I really love.
Yes. I'm so happy that it's catching on. And I feel like if we can just continue the direction that we're in, yeah, tremendous benefits.
Yeah, for sure. So I wanted to go back and talk about a few things. So the products you use on your skin, let's dive into that. Because I know you make an amazing cream. It's called Magnificent Moisture Skin Cream, right? And can you tell me about that and how it kind of helps with your skin's microbiome as well?
Yes. Thank you for asking about that. And I have been making Magnificent Moisture Cream for over 20 years. And it's something that right now it's about to be launched at the Rochester People's Food Co-op on July 3rd. It will be available on the shelf. And right now it's available at the Ashland, Oregon Food Co-op. And will be for sale on the website as well when we launch with the People's Co-op. So I've been selling it to clients and friends and giving it as gifts for years. And then just this past year, my partner and I, Britt Ivy, she's based out of Ashland, Oregon. We have it available now for sale on the shelf, which is really exciting. And I felt like over 20 years ago that back then there wasn't as much available as there is now. Now it seems like there's much more of a consciousness around non-toxic skincare. At the time, there wasn't a lot, and I felt like if I could just spend some time really researching ingredients for the skin that are nourishing and helpful for all the qualities that we want for radiant skin, then I could make something better than what was available. And so I just poured my research, the research that I had done with nutrition, and I just applied it to the skin and played around and tinkered in my kitchen. And initially it was just the first rendition, and then I kept refining it and tweaking it and honing it through the years until it came to the formula I have now, which it doesn't have any preservatives in it. It doesn't have the parabens. It has only essential oil and herbal type preservatives. And so using all of the organic botanical oils and essential oils and flower oils that ancient cultures have used for millennia. So again, I tied it back into the question I asked was, well, what have cultures used on their skin? Places like Greece and places that had a history of France and history of wonderful ancient formulas. And I found it fascinating to really dig in and deep dive into how do we make sure we have access to that now. And so the lovely thing is that there's companies that sell all these great raw materials nowadays that are really pure. And so I, at the time that I first was playing with it, I was living at 9,000 feet elevation in the Colorado mountains. And that's when I really wanted to create something that was sun protective without, it, you know, doesn't have an SPF, and yet it's very, very protective against wind and sun and dry air, because it's very, very dry there with the altitude plus the just the low moisture in the air in Colorado. And so that was when I really put it to the test. And then, of course, through the Minnesota winters, feeling like I wanted something that was a barrier to that cold, cold air and the harshness of a winter climate. And so it all started with wanting to make sure that there was nothing in the cream that would interfere with the good flora in the skin, and wanting to make sure nothing was causing any toxic effect to the rest of the microbiome. So yeah, I just really started out wanting to create something for myself, and then I just started giving it as gifts, and then people really were happy with it, loving it, and it all blossomed from there.
That's amazing. And that's so cool that you went into it and just did the research and kind of developed your own thing to meet your need. And now so many other people can benefit from it.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And I'm really excited. It's something, it's been my passion making it for years. And I'm excited that I had the opportunity to share it with others and to give them a chance to experience it and say, oh, you know, this is something that even very, very sensitive skin, you know, that's the feedback that I've had for people that have tried other creams and felt like they wanted something that even the most sensitive skin does well with. So yeah, I'm loving playing with it and sharing it.
Great. What do you, besides the cream, what do you recommend for people to keep their skin healthy, like from the inside out, as far as nutrition goes? Do you have some go-to recommendations there?
Yeah. So a big part of what I talk about with my clients is helping the, basically in a nutshell, the integrity of the gut wall, which mm-hmm. we now know is only one cell thick. And so things that help with the skin would be really at a deeper level, aside from healthy food and cultured foods and what you put on your skin. The place that I really start with is the integrity of the gut wall and making sure that what are called the tight junctions, which are these little junctions around the intracellular space of your gut, that we have that barrier really powerfully healthy and strong. And so a lot of people are familiar with the term leaky gut. And that really is what they're talking about, where these junctions and the wall of the gut is sealed, what I call sealed and healed. And so you're keeping that really nice and intact. And when that is strong, then that is going to affect so many aspects of your digestion and then your immune health, which is going to affect your liver and your kidneys, and then of course the skin. And so a lot of times when I work with clients that have something going on with their skin that is not optimal and they want to heal certain skin issues, we will start with the first place we start is with the gut lining. And so there's so many things you can do to help with that. I would say that's going to have the greatest impact on the health of your skin.
Absolutely. And what are some things you do to help the gut lining? Or how would people even know, like, other than maybe skin issues, what are some signs of leaky gut? And how would people know, like, that it's a problem?
Yeah, so there's so many things that, such a vast subject. I'm just trying to put it into a shorter, like, for one example, if someone is not digesting proteins well, for whatever reason, which is a very detailed reasons as to why, just to give it like an example where you're wanting to know things they can do. If the proteins aren't digesting well, they will leak out into the bloodstream. And so to get them to digest their proteins better would be, first of all, making sure that their hydrochloric acid is sufficient and that their enzymes are sufficient. So they would first start with making sure they're eating things that are supportive to their digestion and avoiding those foods that are not. So that would be kind of an individual thing. And that's where, with my work, I really honor the individuality of each person. And there's so much information out there with what to eat, what not to eat, and it gets really overwhelming for people. And so I feel like it's good to experiment on a basic level to look at their diet and say, okay, if I eliminated one thing that perhaps could be an issue and just kept it really simple, eliminated that for a period of 3 weeks to a month, see how I do, and then reintroduce a small amount of that food back in and see if I have a reaction, is a real simple thing people can do, because otherwise it's kind of confusing to know what to eat, what's influencing the gut wall. So a lot of times that's the first place they can start. It's just saying, okay, well, if I eliminated this one thing, did I have better energy? Did I sleep better? Did I feel better in my tummy? And then they can go on to the next thing. So of course, with my practice with clients, I work with something called quantum reflex analysis. And that's a way that I can really individualize and find out what it is in their lifestyle that is supportive or perhaps throwing them off balance.
And can you tell us more about what quantum reflex analysis is?
Yeah, so QRA for short it's a system that's very effective at testing the energetic status of the body's key organ and gland points. So it's using a muscle testing technique that's been proven by universities to be very, very effective. And we work with reflex points, again, that are in the medical research. It's all based on the acupuncture system. I don't use acupuncture needles. I'm not an acupuncturist. I work with that system of meridian points, all the organ and gland points. And it has the ability to identify and eliminate the root of the problem. So you're really honing in on specific testing techniques to find hidden infections and hormone imbalances, thyroid imbalances, digestive problems, skin problems, all that type of thing. And again, I'm not treating or diagnosing any issues. I am working with the body's organ and gland points, and I'm pinpointing how to give nutritional support for the body. So what I love about it is that there's a huge research that's been done on the system, and there's just a great track record of practitioners around the world that have had the training, where to me it's the proof of the pudding. You know, did people get better? And there's a wonderful many years now of results from it. So I found before I did QRA, which, like, I've been doing nutrition for over 22 years since my master's degree, that there's so much great general information you can give people. And yet there's nothing like being able to work with someone and QRA test their body and say, this is what it's the root of an issue that they want to balance. And it just quickly pinpoints it. And then you can figure out what do they need, how much of, say they needed a certain herb that was helpful, how much and for how long. And it really gets to the root where you're simplifying things. And I know people, you know, a lot of times they get overwhelmed. They walk in a co-op or a health store and think, I don't know what's best for me, what foods are best for me, what supplements. And there's just so many options when they start researching conditions on the internet. And it just helps to really hone in on what each person needs in terms of their diet and their best approach to their health.
And can you talk about what QRA testing actually involves? Like, what do you do? Like, what is the testing piece?
Yeah, so the testing piece is done in person. There's a lot of things I can do over the phone, and QRA, you do need to be with the person in you know, living color, have them right there with you. And so that they are using kinesiology testing, the client is testing and giving acupressure to different organ and gland points. Like, say we're working on digestion, so you're doing acupressure on the stomach meridian point or the large intestine meridian points. And then I am doing kinesiology testing as they're doing acupressure on that specific point. I am testing whether they are weak or strong on that point. So I'm doing a muscle test called the bidigital O-ring test, which is basically something available on PubMed that they've done the most research on medically on the effectiveness of it. And so that one is used in Japan. It was invented by a physician called Dr. Omura. And what's wild is that you can actually find YouTube videos where they show a patient in a Japanese hospital and the doctor's in the white coat doing the bidigital O-ring test. So they use it in their hospitals. They use it in their medical system over in Japan. And it was a Japanese doctor who wanted to find a way to muscle test that was actually put to the test of rigorous scientific analysis. So they have put that one to the test. There's many, many ways you can kinesiology test. The bidigital O-ring is the one that the QRA system uses because it's the most effective and most scientifically proven.
Interesting. That is really cool. So can you kind of give us an example of, like, so if you do this test, do you have any like examples of people you've worked with where you've tested and like kind of what you've done?
Yeah, you know, I have testimonials on my website. So that would be a place where people could go and just see some of my clients and what the benefits and the results they've had from QRA testing. So for example, you know, coming back to the microbiome, by QRA testing organ and gland points related to the gut microbiome, which would be digestion points, that's always the very first place I start. So that if your QRA digestion points are needing some support, then we know the microbiome is needing support. So I could actually test those points and find certain foods that we can work with that will strengthen those points. So say we even could work with cocoa kefir and say, oh, is that supportive if we put that next to you in your field? And is that helping with certain QRA digestion acupressure points? And so there's, you know, endless applications for it, but you can find ways to pinpoint certain, somebody might have an imbalance that would show up where they need a certain antimicrobial they've been exposed to, whether that's bacteria or say they have parasites or something in their gut. So then I can quickly work with it. And yeah, I have lots of happy clients who feel like they had struggled with digestive issues for years. They knew their microbiome and their gut was needing some support. So that's really what I focus on, is how do we balance that to give them, you know, getting rid of anything that doesn't belong in their gut microbiome and then enhancing it from all the good stuff. And so you're really going at it from two places. Then, of course, with basic digestive health, with using things like beet-derived betaine hydrochloride is one of the things I use often, find very, very helpful for people for protein digestion and absorbing your nutrients in general. So gosh, that subject is so vast.
Yeah. Well, and the betaine hydrochloride is something that I've been hearing more about, and even I've heard and haven't personally known, but have been hearing that potentially some patients who are getting acid suppressive therapy for like reflux and things potentially are more low on acid than actually producing excessive acid, but some of the symptoms are similar, which I find super interesting. And I've heard that that is one modality that can potentially help with that.
Yes. You know, and that in my training with QRE, I learned so much about the stomach acid. It's a fascinating subject because what gets confusing is when people talk about acid, they don't distinguish between hydrochloric acid, which we all need lots of, and we produce naturally our level of acid where it's needed. It's actually very, very high. The healthier you are in children, healthy children, very, very high. Whereas when people have symptoms of, say, heartburn and acid indigestion, and then they're told they have too much acid, that's actually excess lactic acid. So then they take an antacid, which suppresses all acid, including the good betaine hydrochloride. So having excess lactic acid is often a symptom of low hydrochloric acid. So they will get some relief by taking something suppressing the lactic acid, but unfortunately, then their food's not digesting well and has a tendency to sit in their gut, and because they've knocked out their good hydrochloric acid. So yeah, so many times if you can give someone supportive, what I prefer is the beet-derived form because it's the live source form, then that will correct the problem that they were having with so-called excess acid and those symptoms. So yeah, it's a fascinating subject. It's actually used with the doctors when they had their little black bag and they went around. Original physicians in the United States that came from Europe, they would always have betaine hydrochloride as part of their medicines. They used it for childbirth, for treating infections, for TB, for as an antibiotic. They used it for so many things. That was before antibiotics were invented. And then it just kind of went out of favor. And now that we're finding the need for having things that work, then, you know, not wanting to overprescribe antibiotics, the betaine HCl is coming more and more back into as a wonderful help for the body. So yeah, it's interesting how things come around full circle.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you use digestive enzymes much in your practice?
I do, you know, and that's where the fermented foods definitely come into play, where I like both. I do like taking digestive enzymes, and then for people that want to start with just increasing the enzyme content of their diet. So anytime you ferment a food like the wonderful Coco Keeper we've been talking about, the enzyme content increases dramatically in cultured foods. So like the one of the pearls, which you asked me what can people do by taking a small serving every day of fermented food, cultured food, they're greatly increasing the enzyme content of their diet. So that would help digest the other cooked food. So they say you had a little serving of that with a meal. You're taking in this wonderful enzyme rich food, which then it's like on the level of taking a digestive enzyme supplement. So yeah, that's why I'm such a big proponent. So it's going to help with, like, we think of raw foods have their enzymes intact. So definitely eating more raw foods is helpful. And then there's the super enzyme rich food, which would be the cultured foods.
I love your whole foods approach. And when you can get it in a food versus having to take a supplement, I think that's a wonderful way to do it as well.
Yes. And I do find that for a lot of people, that is, if they're willing to make that kind of a change, I like to start with food and diet and as much as possible, keep it simple. It can get a little overwhelming where people feel like, okay, well, what's going to have the most bang for my buck to start with? And I'm, you know, very much aware of wanting to keep it as simple as possible.
Absolutely. One of the things I wanted to kind of talk with you about, since we have a little more time, is just, I noticed on your website, and it totally piques my interest, that you work with balancing hormones. And I'd love to hear how you're using nutrition to help balance hormones.
Yeah. There is a whole interesting field that's come out. One of the names for an aspect of that hormonal field with the gut is called the estrobiome, which I find so interesting that they understand now with so many studies that have come out the connection between hormones and the microbiome. And so like just to take it from a one hormone, cortisol, which we want our cortisol levels to be in balance. A lot of discussion lately about stress and high cortisol levels, so that that can have far-reaching effects on, it's kind of like which one comes first, like unhealthy microbiome can contribute to high cortisol levels. High cortisol can contribute to an imbalanced microbiome. So on that one level, if we can do the things that help to balance out our stress hormones, are then going to be very, very nurturing for our whole microbiome. So there's so much you can do for that. And then the hormones in general, you want to make sure that you are balancing out some of the environmental estrogens that are found where there's, you know, gosh, that, again, that's just a whole vast subject. So I would say on a simple level, cortisol would be the best one to address to start with. And that would be, of course, trying to mitigate stress, which we all are working on that, and making sure we're getting good sleep every night. So, you know, with the cortisol, the gut lining is definitely, they communicate. When the cortisol is high, it can create the leaky back to that one cell wall, one cell thick gut wall. So the good news is that with hormones, if we are addressing things that help nurture our gut, we are going to lower those stress hormones. If we are addressing things in our lifestyle that help lower our stress, we're going to be nurturing the gut wall. So they really have a symbiotic relationship. So that's probably the simplest thing people can start with.
That's a really good point. And I think cortisol is so important as far as minimizing it, because like you said, if you are shunting all your kind of hormone precursors to making cortisol, you're not going to be making your other hormones as effectively. So totally makes sense.
Yes. And then just a little add on with hormones that ties into everything else, our healthy gut flora produce B vitamins and vitamin K. So we, our bacteria in and of themselves in our gut produce nutrients. They're like little nutrient vitamin producing factories when they're healthy. For example, there are certain strains that will produce folate, which is vitamin B9. And folate's gotten a lot of attention lately. Genetic testing where people are finding that they're not converting folic acid well, which is a synthetic version, that they need the real thing, the real folate, or they need to at the same time work on helping their gut flora to be a little vitamin producing factory. So if we can get our flora to be our natural state, which is to this wonderful production of B vitamins. Well, B vitamins both mitigate stress, and when we're under stress, we use up our B vitamins very quickly because they're water soluble. So if we could address that, we could really, when needed, we will have this great supply of B vitamins that our microbiome is making our little factory going in there. So that right there will lower our cortisol because we're always having access to our own production. So I love that kind of stuff that science is showing. Gosh, you know, we can really create our own stress reduction through the health of our gut.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. So I know there's a lot of dietary philosophy out there and people saying like, oh, keto is the best or paleo or whatever. Do you have any certain way of eating that you tend to find yourself recommending most often for clients?
Yeah, I find that it is so individual, and there are certain foundational principles. And I find I do recommend Sally Fallon's Nourishing Traditions book because of the fact that she really gets into how to prepare foods in a way that's most digestible. And then within that book, there are many, many different types of foods. So in other words, I really honor everyone's individual biochemistry and then the different stages of their life, the different seasons. So for some people, keto might work great. For other people, it would be very, very not helpful for them. They need carbohydrates. And then it would be like, well, how do we prepare those carbohydrates to be digestible? What are certain principles that are time proven? How do we prepare certain keto foods that are nourishing? So I feel for me, it comes down to more what are the best versions of those different macronutrients versus a certain diet that is kind of a fad at the moment. And it seems like they come and go. And so I really feel like people need to honor their own body and find the diet that works best for them. And that is definitely not a one size fits all.
I love that. That is like the best way I've heard it explained ever.
Well, thank you.
I totally agree with you. And I think being in tune and listening to your body, like you said, even with the QRA, but it, a lot of times you know how things make you feel if you're kind of paying attention to what you're eating and how you're feeling when you eat it and what energy that food has. So
yes. And I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just kind of wanted to add in that I'm really a big proponent of a state of joy and appreciation while you're eating, and that really does play into it. And, you know, sharing meals with loved ones and that whole nurturing kind of energy around food is just, to me, so key. And so I want to make sure that to really emphasize that the state of being you're in at the time of digestion is
beautifully said. That's, it makes so much difference with how the food is assimilated in your body.
Definitely. Yes.
Yeah. So that is a perfect transition to our kind of end of interview questions. What does nourish mean to you?
Yes. So that does tie into what I just said. As a nutritionist, people would expect me to say, relating that more to food. For me, nourishing means what brings you a sense of joy and well-being from all aspects of life. What nourishes your spirit, what nourishes your soul, nourishes your heart. That to me is most important. And so that's how I would define it. Ask the question, for me, it's really relating to at a deeper level, nature and being out and in living out in nature and amongst the trees and the flowers and the plants. And that's my most nourishing thing, first and foremost.
I love it. Absolutely. So what's one thing you do consistently for self-care?
There's so many things. One of the things that I feel is really, really key is tying back to my Magnificent Moisture Cream is making sure that I'm taking care of what I put on my body is very, very healing and supportive. So that would include anything on my skin and anything that is relating to healing baths and healing, recognizing that what we put on our body is so, so important to our self-care. And so we don't have the doesn't go through the digestive organs to break it down. So it's even more immediately absorbed. So you can take things into the body through the skin as a therapeutic way. And you can also make sure that you're being mindful of whatever goes on the skin goes right into your body. There are certain doctors that have used foot baths as a way to herbal treatment just through a foot bath. Mm-hmm. That's the only way they give herbs. There's a doctor in France that was famous for that. And so I find that really interesting that type of self-care can be a very powerful therapy.
Wonderful. So I know after listening to this, some of our listeners are going to want to connect with you. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
My website has my information on there through JulianneSotirio.com with my phone, email. They can get a hold of me. Two ways are definitely listed on my website. And then there's a way through the website to directly send me a question or a comment. So you can access me from many, many ways.
Perfect. And I'll link that up in the show notes. I'll also put a link to your fabulous blog with the recipe for the Young Coconut Kefir Water, which I think sounds awesome. And I can't wait to try the recipe.
Thank you so much, Amy. I really appreciate that. And I also just wanted to add that everything I share from my heart is, if it resonates for you, definitely love for you to try it. And whatever doesn't resonate, you know, everybody, I honor everyone's path. And so I'm sharing with you my passion, my experience, and that there is no right or wrong way. It's what feels the best for each person.
Thank you so much for listening to Nourish and Shine. I hope that you enjoy this episode and that you'll leave me a review on iTunes so that more people can hear the podcast. I'd also love to connect with you on social media. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I would love to hear your questions, so please send them my way. Also, you can check out my website. It's amysopola.com. I hope that today's interview provided you with some inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and to live a whole, vibrant life. Please join me again next week for another amazing interview. Have a wonderful week. The information provided on this podcast is for educational purposes only. It's not intended to diagnose or treat any disease or condition. Please do not apply any of this information without first speaking with your medical provider.